Good evening, everyone. My name is Mark McClellan, and I'm a practicing orthodontist here in the North Shore of Chicago. I'm also president of Macro Wealth Management, which is a wealth management company for dentists. We've got a large group listening tonight from all over the country, so we look forward to sharing a great presentation with you. If you've not already heard Bill Blackford speak, I know you're in for a real treat. The topic this evening is effective case presentations. And as I mentioned previously, I'm a practicing orthodontist, and I really know the importance of effective case presentations. Because having a patient accept your treatment plan is truly the lifeblood of what we do in our practice. You can have all the patients in the world, but if they don't accept your treatment, your practice is going to suffer somewhat. And Bill is also a dentist, and back in the 80s, he was producing over $1 million a year, and crowns were only $300 a piece. So he obviously has a very powerful and effective methodology for case presentation. So without further ado, Bill, tell us how you developed this system.
Well, thanks, Mark. This is actually my favorite subject, and I want to welcome all of you on this call tonight that are listening in, that are Mark's clients or my clients. And one of the things, is the reason we started these calls is that Mark and his partner and I got together, and they said, you know, we can manage wealth and we can help doctors preserve wealth, create wealth, but we need money to work with. And one of the things that I've done, I've practiced dentistry for 20 years, and for the last 20, I have worked with doctors on how to improve their practices. And we can create an extra $100,000 or so a year for a practitioner. And you see, that's the only time you can do any financial planning. It's real difficult to start saving substantial amounts of money out of your current income. And the reason is, of course, as Mark and his partner talked about, is that everyone grows their lifestyle to match their income. It's just a fact of life. And so the only time you can really start to do any substantial savings or substantial debt reduction is when you increase your income. And, you know, one of the things that we've always looked at is, you know, how do you increase the income in a dental practice? And last month we had a subject, how to increase profit, and what that boils down to, of course, is, you know, lowering your expenses or increasing your income. We looked at some ways to lower expenses, but there's really not a whole lot we can do. So it always comes over on the demand side, and that's how to increase the demand for your services. Well, to go back and answer Mark's question, how did we develop this? And like Mark said, I did over $1 million in production in a small town in Oregon when crowns were $300. I got excited and interested in how to present dentistry early in my career, and at that time, everyone was teaching us if we just educated our patients enough, they would do the treatment. And that's still being taught. It just amazes me today that there's still this feeling it's about a patient education. Now, I'm going to throw a concept out here tonight and just for you to think about. But if education were how human beings base their behavior, there wouldn't be a single physician who smokes. There wouldn't be a single physician who's overweight and doesn't exercise on a regular basis. You know anybody, any physicians in that situation, Mark, that smoke or don't exercise four times a week and
quite a few
a little overweight? Now, you see, the only reason, if this premise about education and human decisions and human behavior were true, you see, there wouldn't be a single physician in that situation, would there?
Nope.
See, the only reason a physician would smoke is they must have skipped pathology the day they talked about heart disease and lung cancer, or accountants who aren't multimillionaires. You see, they certainly have the knowledge, but they don't do it. And one of the things that I discovered was that education, and I went the Bob Barkley route, and I had a special room built for education in my practice. I had a phase microscope, closed circuit TV. I had a slide projector, and I'd show them slides of their teeth and disasters, and I would show them. You know, I had a special little table built to show them their x-rays, and, you know, we teach them about little gray lines and how they could die of wide gray line disease, and you're looking at the wrong gray line, and look at this, and educate, educate, educate. Well, I started getting interested in case presentation and how to present the value of treatment because I recognized, number one, other dentists are not our competitors. Our competitors are people that sell automobiles, furniture, sporting goods, travel, remodels, etc. In other words, other forms of discretionary spending. Now, this took some work. Now, one of the things that happened is I met a psychiatrist on a chairlift one day, and he got to talking about his practice. And he had an interesting practice in that he did not belong to a hospital staff. He didn't use a lot of medications. As a matter of fact, he wasn't using medications at that time. And but he would bring people in, and he would sit down and ask them a series of questions, and they would diagnose their own problem. Now, once they diagnosed their own problem, another series of questions would be how they're going to solve the problem. And when they figured out the solution to the problem they had discovered themselves, he would pronounce them cured, and he would bill them. And I thought, wow, that's cool. Because in my dental practice, I had to bring people in. I figured out what was wrong. I had to convince them to do the treatment. And then I had to do the treatment. And then I'd tell them they're cured, and I'd bill them. Well, I hired him on a hourly basis, and it was an agreement that it would go on for 3 months minimum, and I couldn't afford his hourly rate. It was twice a month, six-hour sessions. And I got four other dentists going with me, but this thing went on for 2 years, and we studied how humans make decisions. And to me, this was an absolute turning point in my practice, in that all of a sudden, people started doing my treatment. Now, here's what we discovered. First off, we discovered two sides of the brain. There's the right side, which is purely emotional. It is the side that we dream with, the side we imagine with. You see, it's the side we make all decisions with, by the way. You see, it's the side of the brain that is engaged after dinner when you order dessert. Now, you know intellectually that dessert is made with, there's not a single ingredient in that dessert that's good for you. And yet, the emotional brain says, hey, I deserve this, I want this. And so then we gather the data, which is what the left side does. The left side processes data, the left side is the rational thinking. And all dentists, Mark, have a very highly developed left brain. We would have made good accountants, engineers, chemists, you name it. We were good on that side of the technical side. And so we think that everybody thinks along the same lines. But even very left-brained individuals, engineers, chemists, scientists, etc., make right-brain decisions. So we started dropping the left brain and the details and started promoting, how do we engage the right brain? How do we get the patient thinking? And this is what I've spent the last 25 years of my career working with dentists on, is how to engage the right brain. Because I feel that almost every problem in business, whether you be in the restaurant business, the hotel business, the automobile business, or the dental business, can be solved by getting out and selling something. And this is where I find that most dentists don't spend any time at all. As a matter of fact, I have a product called the Blatchford Files, and I did a recording recently on supply versus demand. Capacity versus demand. And capacity, of course, is our ability to produce dentistry. Demand is patients wanting to have the treatment done. And my observation is that almost every dentist, every dental practice, has more capacity than they have demand for services. Now, if some of you have read our book, Playing Your A Game, you'll find that we have clients that earn from, anywhere up to, I guess the highest person in that book earned $3 million the year, or produced $3 million the year after the book was written. I think she did about 1.9 the year we wrote the book. And that's one doctor, four staff members, working 3.5 days a week. And then we have clients, many clients, that $1.5 million range with three, four staff members. And what these people have learned is how to present the value of the dentistry. And that's really
how do I look?
You look great.
Key. So what we want to do tonight is spend a little bit of time on how do you do this? How do you engage the right brain? How do you get people to say yes to treatment without putting pressure on people? And this is the thing that is extremely freeing for the dentist and their staff, is because we're no longer trying to talk people into treatment. So what we do in the way we present the treatment is, first off, you have to accept a paradigm shift that all dentistry is optional. Beyond the relief of pain, and again we have to say acute pain and acute infection, everything else is optional. Now, this is where orthodontics has understood this for years, Martin. This is where I think one of the reasons that orthodontists have done so well with case presentations, case acceptance. You know, one of the things I looked at when I studied this, and by the way, that psychiatrist got me started on a path of studying sales. I've read somewhere in the 250 books on sales over the years, and I've taken probably 20 professional sales classes or courses. And orthodontists are really top of the acceptance rate in dentistry. Interesting thing is, ortho is probably the most optional treatment of anybody in dentistry. And you take a look at
And higher fees, too.
And higher fees and very little insurance.
Right.
But orthodontists have always recognized it's optional. And so they've worked at this. I won't go into who's the lowest in dentistry, but it's a very needed specialty area. And they probably are the most intellectual of all specialists. And yet, they get the lowest acceptance rate. And it's almost always covered by insurance. So there's a contrast. So what we started looking at is understanding that dentistry is optional. Why don't we tell people that? So the first thing we do is we understand that everything is optional, even teeth are optional. Now, for some of you, that's going to be a tough concept to grasp. Intellectually, you understand it, but can you really perform? That's where we get some coaching involved in, to work with you and your team on this. Anytime there's a paradigm shift, those that have the most success in the old paradigm have the hardest time changing. So you can figure out on your team who has the hardest time changing. Number one is the doctor, two is the hygienist, and then it goes on from there. But first off, it's optional. So when the question comes up, well, what do I really need? You don't need anything. You don't even need your teeth. And then I'd tell a story about my grandparents who lived long, useful lives without teeth. And so, just to emphasize the point. Now, accepting that point, what we want to do, instead of trying to educate the patient, which isn't going to work. Now, all of you that love to educate your patients, let me give you just a little bit of hope that you can still do that. Education is a vital part of treatment, but it has nothing to do with the sales process. You see, the sales process is strictly emotional. Decisions are made emotionally, instantly, and permanently. Keep that in mind as we go through this. Now, in addition to this, I want you to think of a quote that I very often quote in seminars, and the quote is this. If you and I are going to do business, we'll work out the details. David Karen, you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. If we're going to do business, we'll work out the details. If we're not going to do business, the details don't matter. Would you agree with that?
Correct.
Now, what do most dentists and dental teams spend most of their time on with a patient?
The details.
The details.
Yeah.
Now, see, this is when you think about it, what you have just agreed with is that if we're going to do business, the details really don't matter. We'll work that out. If we're not going to do business, details don't matter. Now, if I could look at a dentist's career, and let's take a dentist who is ready to retire, and we were to say, how much of your time did you spend talking to potential patients, that is, they haven't written a check yet. And everybody's a potential patient until they write a check, aren't they? They don't become patients until they pay you. How much time did you spend during your career discussing details with people that weren't going to do business with you? And if right now we could give that time back to you, how valuable would that time be? And we might give them 4 or 5 years, you see. More time to do whatever they want to do. Give them 4 or 5 years back in their life that they spent. And that doesn't even count the time that they spent in the evenings working up these detailed treatment plans for people that hadn't said yes yet. So we developed a system, it's the method that we teach, and it's the method that we developed in my practice, and I've refined it a lot over the last 25 years of teaching. And really what we're trying to do is real simple. I'm going to try and make this complicated to make this last 45 minutes to an hour tonight, but it's such a simple concept. You simply find out what people want, you give it to them. I mean, how simple can I make it? Find out what they want and give it to them. So when people call the office, and it takes tremendous team training to make this happen. Everybody's got to be on exactly the same page. They have to know the vision of the practice. They have to be able to have these conversations and know what these scripts are. and be able to do them. Now, I did say scripts, and a lot of you panic at the word script. But a script is no more than a conversation that we've thought about in the future. We've thought about it, and we've practiced it, and we can repeat it. And while you're thinking that scripts are canned and unnatural, I remind you that people walk out of movies with tears in their eyes, not thinking, oh, well, he didn't really love her, he was just following the script. No, scripts can be done in a very authentic nature. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I point out to clients is everybody's life is on a script. We all have scripts. There are scripts in your life that you know the conversation before it even takes place. It may be with your children, maybe with your spouse, maybe with your parents. It may be with your office staff. It may be the script that your staff has when you walk in the morning. It's a script. Now, there are some scripts that are effective, and there are scripts that are ineffective or less effective. Wouldn't it make sense to develop scripts in the area of talking to patients that are effective? Now, we're going to start on the telephone tonight with some scripts, and I believe we have two sessions of this case presentation for clients of macro wealth management. And this is the first one. We did one last week or last month on how to become more profitable. So where it's going to start is, it's a real simple question. I'm going to give you some questions tonight as we go along and some scripts. We start with, hello, this is so-and-so's office where we're improving the world a smile at a time, or whatever it is you say. This is Mary and I can help you. How can I help you today? And you listen to what they want. Now, here's something we find. First off, they're going to tell you something that they want. But what we know is they want three things from a dental office. They want to look better, they want to feel better, and they want value. That's it. It's really nothing simple. Nobody wants a root canal. Nobody wants a perio treatment. Nobody wants ortho treatment. They want a beautiful smile. And what we spend our time on is we spend our time on selling the process. Instead, what we have to do is we have to emphasize what it is they want. So we find out. Now, we start out and we've put together a series of questions that we ask, and we actually ask the questions in order. And we can start right out on the phone. Now, this conversation is probably going to scare a few of you because you're thinking, well, my person answering the phone couldn't do this. Well, that may be true, but they could be trained to do this. They could be trained. And one of our premises is that we don't need the dentist to be involved until the patient is serious and ready to put some money down. A lot of you like to get involved and spend time before the patient even commits, and I'm saying, that's a waste of your time. So we're going to start on the telephone with how can I help you, and people are going to respond any way they want. I mean, they're just simply going to respond. Now, I want you to remember that this presentation is not about convincing people to do it your way. This is about finding out what they want. This is about finding out what they want, listening, and then making an evaluation. Can we accomplish what the patient wants? And if we can, we better talk about what it's going to cost, and we better find out what the patient wants to do. Real simple. So we ask, how can we help them? Now, remember, find out what they want and give it to them. I have to tell a funny story here, Mark, just to make my point. About 2 weeks ago, my wife and I were in Seattle meeting with a new client, which is what we do. We spend a day with a new client. We were at the Marriott Hotel in Seattle and having breakfast, and my client asked for 2 boiled eggs. And their waitress said, we don't have boiled eggs. We could poach them for you. Oh, wait a minute, I'm not much of a culinary artist, but what I understand about cooking eggs is and I do cook breakfast every morning, but if you poach an egg, you break it out of the shell first and put it in the boiling water. If you boil an egg, you put the whole egg inside the shell in the boiling water. Is that about how you do it?
Yes.
Now she cannot serve a boiled egg, but she can serve a poached egg. Now, how ridiculous is that? We have both ingredients. We have the eggs, and we have boiling water. And she says, no, we cannot serve a boiled egg. And I said, wait a minute. Isn't it just a matter of when you take it out of the shell? She says, I understand, but we don't serve boiled eggs. So he said, okay, poach him. Now, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, when you think about it, listen to what they want and give it to them. However, in a dental office, here's one of the things I hear quite often. Hello, I'm new in town. I'd like to have my teeth cleaned. And what does dentistry say? Maybe not your offices, but what do we say? What have we been trained by, and still being trained by many consultants, what do we say? We can't do that. We have to do a complete exam first, and that will include a full series of records, spend an hour with a doctor, and we'll figure out what your needs are, and if we decide your teeth are dirty enough, we'll set up a separate appointment to clean your teeth. I mean, have you heard that?
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Poster boiled. See, it sounds ridiculous, poster boiled, but yet in dental offices, we do the same sort of thing, and we just think that's normal. See, that waitress could defend why we don't serve boiled eggs. And yet most dental receptionists can defend why they don't clean somebody's teeth. So if somebody wants something, the first answer we have to learn to give them is, yes, we'd be happy to do that. That's what we get up at 5 o'clock this morning for. That's why the doctor invested $400,000 in this place. We'd love to see him clean your teeth. Is that true?
Yep.
Now, I didn't say, without an exam, I didn't say break the state law, but what's the answer? The answer is yes. Instead of no, we don't do it that way. Now, that's a huge concept. Anytime you start a conversation with yes, you're going to get much further down the road towards a conclusion than if you start with no. It's one of the basic rules of negotiation. You try to say yes. Then you work out the details. So we're going to find out what they want. We're going to find out, and let's take the case of cosmetics, which a lot of my clients do a lot of, and most dentists would like to do more of, although it applies to TMJ headaches, it applies to implants, it applies to ortho, it applies to anything you're doing in your practice. You find out what they want, but what you want to find out is, why do they want it? What are they expecting changed? What improvement will they get in their life if we have this done? You see, it's not the treatment. You know, Jenny Craig has made millions. What does Jenny Craig sell?
Weight loss.
Weight loss. No, you're thinking like a dentist, Mark. She doesn't sell weight loss. She sells looking good, feeling good. She doesn't sell weight loss programs. You see, and I'm glad you said that because I couldn't have put you there as a plant. And by the way, further than the call, Martin, I did not rehearse that. He's thinking like a dentist. He's thinking people love ortho treatment. People don't like ortho treatment. People like it mysteriously or magically have straight teeth. Is that right, Mark?
That's
absolutely, absolutely right.
I mean, they don't want the process.
Phone call seminar.
Jenny Craig did not sell weight loss programs, exercise bicycles, and diet food. She sells looking good, feeling good, and accountability. That's what she sells. I mean, most dentists would be somewhat hung up in the gear ratio of the bicycle and the caloric intake of the food, you see. Instead, they create this image of you being thin and healthy, how easy it's going to be to accomplish, and people sign up in droves to do the same thing they could do on their own if they wanted to or if they had the discipline to do. She's made millions. Now, this is what we have to take advantage of. So here's what people want. They want to look good, feel good, and they want value. So how can I help you? Well, I'd like my teeth whiter. I'd like my teeth straighter. Or I'd like my denture to stay in. I mean, all of these things. But you have to boil it down. You have to examine why they want those things. So what you want to do is find out how not having those things has made their life. I'm going to tease you for a moment. You are trying to find out how wretched and miserable life is with crooked teeth or not so white teeth or that denture that's not stable or that missing tooth or whatever it is. And you want them to talk about how it's affected their life. So one of the questions we ask is, well, how long has this been a problem? When do you notice this problem? You know, what are you doing when you notice this problem? See, what I want that patient to be doing is I want them to be engaging the right side of their brain so that they are thinking back to the time when they first noticed they didn't like their smile for whatever reason it was. Could be missing teeth, could be whiteness, could be crooked teeth, could be whatever. Worn teeth, could be anything. I want them thinking back to the time that that occurred. Now, it's not so much for history. I want them thinking back to that time when they first noticed it. For example, maybe they have noticed for the last 5 or 10 years that when they have their picture taken, say in a group photo, they always have their mouth closed. They don't smile. Or maybe they notice that they tend to not smile much. See, when they start to notice those things, again, it's not from a historical point of view, it's what did it feel like when you saw these photos and you were never smiling? How did it feel when, and without asking that question, you get them thinking about that. How did smile look in that photo and everybody else was smiling, looked like they were having a great time, and you literally had a frown on your face because you didn't want to show your teeth? That's the emotions that you want them to feel. You know, for example, sometimes we ask people in the area of white teeth, and I'm using this as an example tonight, what have you tried? Well, maybe they've tried the whitening toothpaste. Well, that really works a lot of times. How did that work for you? Well, it actually didn't work. Have you tried anything else? Well, I tried the whitening kit that I got at the drugstore. Now, the typical thing that dentists would love to do or staffs would love to do is tell them why those aren't effective. And instead, what we say, well, you know, those work pretty well sometimes. How did that work for you? Well, it didn't work either. Well, what else have you tried? Well, I don't smile much. You don't smile much. How's that working for you? You mentioned you had grandchildren. You mentioned you had people at work. You relate to the conversation, and you'll get answers back like, well, they could think I'm not very happy. If you can get them thinking about that, how's that working for those folks around you? What have you tried? How'd that work? And then sometimes what you may do is you may show them a photograph of a case you've done. Now, one thing I'll caution on this is that you don't use photographs that so many dentists use, which are taken with cheek retractors, and you're taking before and afters, and you're showing them all the details of all the dentistry. And no. You show them afters. You tell a story about the patient. Here's a patient a lot like you, Mark. Came in, really didn't need any dentistry. We got to, because everybody thinks they don't need any dentistry, and they don't. We got to talking. He wanted a more youthful appearance.
But you said we're not comfortable.
Here's what we're able to do in his case. What do you think? Here's another case. And you show pictures of people, and you tell stories of people. You do not show pictures and stories of teeth. It would be so easy for the dentist and us to come out and talk about how we did 8 veneers, we did 2 crowns and 4 veneers, and here we did orthodontics, and here we did gingival recontouring, and here we did that, to that, you know, all that stuff. Those are details the patient doesn't want to hear. So we don't do that. We show them some photographs. We tell a story about how it improved the patient's life, how it improved their life. And then we say something to this. This is going to scare many of you. Have you ever thought about a budget for something like this? See, we're going to talk money early on in this conversation. We're going to be talking money sometimes on the telephone, many times on the telephone. And I know there are a lot of consultants out there that say you should never talk money on the phone. You should never talk. Only the staff should talk money. Doctors should never talk money. And I think that's somewhat because that's what doctors want to hear. My clients get very comfortable with money, Mark. They get very comfortable talking about what we do and what we charge for it, because we believe that what we do is a valuable service. And I perform a valuable service, and that's how I make my living. That's how I support my family. And I charge a fair fee, and I'm proud of the fee that I charge. And we get very comfortable with it. The team gets comfortable with it. And so we start talking money early on in the conversation, and we bring it up. Because you think about it. And there are some people that say, well, let's just pretend money's not an issue. Well, that's like, don't think about something. You know, that's like, you know, the baseball catcher or coach coming out telling the pitcher, don't pitch high and outside to this guy. Don't pitch high and outside. Whatever you do, don't pitch high and outside. You hit it high and outside, this guy's going to head out of the park. Do not hit it high and out. Don't throw it high and outside. Where's the ball go every time?
Yeah, high and outside.
It's like when you go to your physician for a physical and they put a cold stethoscope on your chest and say, just breathe normally. How do you breathe normally? Now you're thinking about it every single time. And I've got a friend who's a GP, and he says every single time you do that, people open their mouth and inhale as loud as they can through their mouth. Just breathe normally. Don't think about money. Let's just pretend money doesn't exist. Well, wait a minute. When a patient comes in or a customer, potential prospect comes in to buy something, what questions they want answered to make a decision?
What's it cost?
What's it going to cost? I mean, that's the first thing they want to know. And then we're saying, don't worry about money. Well, don't worry about it. Let's talk about it. So we bring it up. Have you thought about a budget for this? Now, for those of you who've been doing it more than 6 months or so, you know about what it's going to cost. When a patient says they want a certain thing accomplished, you've got an idea what it's going to cost. So tell them how much it's going to be. This could be as much as, and you tell them. Then you listen. And the responses are going to be something in the line of, wow, that's a lot of money, or that's more than I expected, or, you know, once in a while, it's not as much as I expected. That doesn't happen very often. It's usually more than they expect. And even if it wasn't more than they expected, that's what they say. We all do that. We all, well, wow, that's a lot of money. Well, that's just conversation. Now, a lot of dentists and dental teams think that's a signal they don't want to buy. No, that's just conversation. Well, what do you mean by a lot of money? Does that mean a lot of money and there's no way in the world, or a lot of money and let's go ahead, or a lot of money and maybe we could make payments? So you see, within 10 or 15 minutes, we've already brought up financial arrangements. We've brought up the fact that they can finance it. And many times on the telephone, this conversation can get started on the phone, and using companies like Care Credit, which sponsors some of my calls and some of my seminars, we can go ahead and make those arrangements today. I've literally had team members that have brought up money on the phone. And again, let's go back to cosmetics for a moment, because it's a large amount, and people seem to have the most trouble selling the large amount. Let's say it's 8 veneers, and let's say they're $1,500 apiece, $12,000, and we talk about that on the telephone with the patient, and the patient says, oh, wow, that's a lot of money. Well, yes, it is. Again, what do you mean by a lot of money? Well, you find out, and if it's, well, could I make payments? Absolutely. And then you go right ahead on the phone. If you'd like me to, I could set that up for you today. Would you like to do that? So in other words, we've already talked about money, and very often my clients have arranged a $12,000 line of credit before the patient shows up in the office. Now, in ortho, this would be the very same. We could do exactly the same thing. And I know there's financing programs in orthodontics, but it's the same program. We talk about it before they even come in, and it makes a huge difference. Back a few years ago, our younger daughter was selling real estate. She's a school teacher and selling real estate part-time and working for a company. And this was in Portland, Oregon. There was a real estate boom, and actually Portland has not flattened out yet. It's still booming. But they wouldn't even take somebody out and show them homes unless they have a prearranged mortgage. In other words, they just wouldn't want to waste their time with people, because houses are selling so fast. If you didn't have a mortgage ready, they didn't even want to show you a home. Now, that makes a lot of sense. So we find out from the patient, would you like to arrange that today? And if the answer is yes, we go ahead and set it up, and then we say, well, what would you like to do next? Well, I'd like to come in and meet the doctor, learn the details, and all that sort of thing. So that's a real short appointment then. Another great question that we ask very often on the phone, and this is a great question. Sounds like you've been doing some research on some cosmetic procedures. Where are you in your research? In other words, have you decided that you're going to do this procedure, or are you still thinking about that? Or have you decided to do the procedure, and now you're shopping for a dentist to do it for you? Great question. You see, if they've already decided to do the veneers or the orthodontics or the implants, there's no point talking about those three things, is there? That decision's already made. Now the decision that I'm faced with is, who's going to do that for me? And so now what we want to do is find out what are they looking for in a dentist. I overheard one of my client's receptionist a couple of years ago. It was in a doctor in Seattle. His name is Dr. Rise Four, and he's been a client for a number of years. And he's actually my personal dentist, and he's allowed me to do some dental work for my family in his office. And I was up there doing some veneers for our daughter, who's actually a third year in dental school. And his receptionist was talking to a patient on the phone, and I heard her ask that question. So my ears perk up, and I start listening, and I can only hear one end of the conversation. But she said, "So it sounds like you've studied veneers quite a bit. Where are you in your research?" And she said, "For example, have you decided you're going to do veneers, or are you still involved in that decision?" Well, as it turns out, he had already made the decision to have the veneers. And now he was shopping for a dentist. And so what she said was, "Is what are you looking for in a dentist?" She said, "I'm looking for somebody with lots of experience." And she says, "Well, Dr. Spohr has probably done more veneers than anyone in Seattle." And that's probably a true statement. Well, she handled that one. Now, that's a script that they've rehearsed, you see. "And I'm looking for someone that can show me photographs of actual work that you have done." And she said, "Well, you're really lucky because Dr. Spohr teaches a class to dentists all over the world," and it's really true. He's taught in Japan, he's taught in Europe, and all across the United States, a class on photography. And so we can literally show you hundreds of patients, which we have done, and photographed. And the patient said, "Well, one more thing, we should talk about economics." And she says, "Well, Dr. Spohr is probably the most expensive in Seattle." Now, a lot of you would be absolutely petrified to say something like that, but wait a minute. In the United States, what do people associate high fee with?
High quality.
High quality. I mean, Nordstrom has made money on this concept. Many brands have made their fortunes on the concept that we, the consumers, believe that a high fee, a high price, probably is directly related to the quality. And by the way, there's not a single person on this call that has not made a decision in some time that you'd rather have quality than lowest price. Speaking of lowest price, one of my clients sent me a video this week that about doctors looking for the lowest price, and this fellow calls, and it's a YouTube video, and he calls, and he's looking for he wants a tooth extracted, but the price is the main thing, and the office starts out at $1,200, and he keeps working it down, what can you do without the shots, et cetera, et cetera. And I know it would be excruciating painful and all that sort of thing. And anyway, he takes them down about $100 a time, dropping various things, and fine, he gets down to the bottom. So now we don't do those little shots prior to the main shot. What could we save by doing that? And he said, "Well, we can get it down $200 for that." Okay, now I know it would be more painful. Now, what could you do if you didn't give any shot at all? I know it would be excruciatingly painful without that, but what would the price be? And finally, the receptionist said, "Well, it'd be $300 less." He says, "Fine, I'd like to make an appointment for my wife." Actually, Mark, I'll send you the video, and you can send it to your clients. It is so
That'd
funny.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
I don't know. The guy has got a British accent. I'm going to speak in London at the British Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry on Friday, and I'm actually going to play it in my seminar. It's funny. But you see, we quote the price, and we find out. Now, what my client's receptionist went on to say, she asked him, "When in researching for a dentist, who else are you talking to?" And the patient told her she was going to two other dentists, and in the Seattle area, we know about who those six or eight doctors in that market are going to, in that end of the market are going to be. She said, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to the other two offices first. I want you to get their estimate, and then I want you to come here. And I promise you'll see a difference." Now, what does that take to have a conversation like that on the telephone?
Confidence.
It takes a lot of confidence in the rest of your team, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That the patient will actually see a difference. And in his office, they actually do see a difference, and his fee is probably the highest. I mean, he's $2,800 a unit, and he stays busy doing dentistry at $2,800 a unit. And he is very good. Now, And you do see a difference in that office. I mean, it is a phenomenal office, but you have to have the confidence to do it. And then the last question, which is our closing question, is what would you like to do next? Real simple. Now, here's a concept that we teach. It's called the no doctor, no fee consultation. We can get a new patient in the same day they call, if necessary. We can get a patient in the next day or a couple of days later, because it's only going to require maybe 5 minutes of the doctor's time. And then we teach the team members to have this conversation before they meet the doctor. So once the phone call takes place, we get them into the office, and the patient comes in to the office, and a team member sits down with the patient and has this conversation or an elaboration of this conversation. And we don't even need the doctor. If the patient says, yes, I'm interested in going ahead, yes, I'm interested in finding out more about this, well, let's get the doctor in, let's meet the doctor, and see where you want to go. And so we can do this, and the doctor doesn't miss a beat from producing dentistry. And if the patient says, no, you know, there's no way in the world, and how many doctors in this call, I'm not going to ask you to respond individually, have spent evenings pouring through records and the patient's chart, and after you've done a complete examination, working up a treatment plan, and the patient still has no clue what it's going to cost, and you bring the patient back in for a separate appointment, you sit down with the patient, try and educate him about the treatment plan, and the final 5 minutes of what's very often the last time you ever see him, you give him the fee, and you never see him again. And the patient didn't have a clue. The patient's embarrassed. There's no way in the world, perhaps, or they weren't ready. And besides that, what was presented wasn't the patient's treatment, wasn't the patient's desires. It was what we thought, based on our value system, was necessary. And that's really the gist of it, is how do you present it? It's, you make it simple. You, how can I help you? And you listen. Find out what they want and give it to them. If we're going to do business, we'll work out the details. If we're not going to do business, the details don't matter. For example, if the patient says, you know, I really understand that, I appreciate the fact, but there's just no way in the world I could afford that. I've been through a bankruptcy. I've got 3 kids in college. I've been divorced. I just lost my job. Look, you can't get that patient financed. You can't talk them into doing treatment. They don't have any money. They're not qualified. Why not find out from the start? And that's really the whole point of this. Now, let's review for a moment. What did I leave out of this whole conversation?
Details.
Details. We did not talk about the dentistry, about what the patient wants. Now, this could be a neuromuscular headache. It could be ortho treatment. It could be implants. It can be anything, you see. It doesn't really matter. We just have to choose cosmetics as an example. But it can be any type of dentistry that you do, or it could be any other product for that matter. It could be a boat. I had a chance to listen to an interview of the number one boat salesman in the country one time, and I can assure you he makes way more than the average dentist makes just selling boats. And he says, I never sit down with a potential customer with a boat in mind. In other words, as a dentist, we never sit down with a potential patient with a treatment plan in mind. We listen to the patient, and we work up the treatment plan to accomplish what that patient wants. And we work with it, whether it's a recall patient or a new patient, it's always the same. So I'm open to questions by anybody. Don't all speak at once.
Well, if there's no questions, I'll make a comment on what you were saying about that emotional versus analytical type of mindset, because everybody in their life tends to make those emotional decisions, and even when we get to that financial planning arena, even when you can verify something, the emotional will almost always win. And so you really need to cater to that, because when you get into that whole emotional aspect of life, really find out what do they want and desire out of life. It's not what they need or what they desire. It's just about what their needs are. It's like, we don't want their needs, we want their wants. And that's a huge, huge aspect of not only my orthodontic practice, but in my financial planning arena.
Well, in financial planning, Mart, it would be real simple. I mean, logic says that we should save 20% of our income every year, and everybody can work out the math on that. If you save 20% of your income a year, and it doesn't matter what age you start, and you invest that in some tax-free environment or tax-postponed environment at a 10% rate of return, 9 to 10 years later, you will have enough money in that investment fund to replicate your income. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's real simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable when you actually sit down and start playing with it, and yet
from a logical, rational point of view, and yet how many people do that?
Well, the numbers say less than 6% of dentists.
Less than 5 to 6% of dentists ever do that, and yet from an educational point of view, that's real simple, and yet nobody does it. So you see, it's not based on data and rationale. It's based on emotions. Yeah, but I'd rather have that new car this year, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd love to invest the money this year, but, you know, I'd rather do a remodel on the house. I'd rather move to a new neighborhood. I'd rather take my family to Hawaii. Questions to some of the doctors.
But what if you know, a lot of patients, at least in my practice, if I were to say, you know, what can we do or how can we help you? I can just, we get a lot of people say, I just want my teeth cleaned.
Uh-huh.
Or I just want, if you find a cavity, fix it.
Uh-huh.
But I rarely get someone really asking for veneers or aesthetic dentistry or implants or things like that. And I always feel like we have to introduce that to the patient.
Well, part of that may be your marketing. Maybe
or lack of, in my
or
case.
Lack of. Or,
yeah.
Well, actually, you know, marketing is also internal. It's not just advertising, but even it may be that people don't even know you do that.
Yeah.
You know, I would start with internally, and I would take a look at the artwork on the walls. Do you have large photographs of people with beautiful smiles? You and your staff, do you have beautiful smiles? Or are you do you have staff members that talking to patients and the patient's thinking, gosh, do whatever you want to my teeth and don't make them look like yours? You know, the internal marketing, it depends what you... So you start with that, and then you go to the external, and what are you... and it could be lack of, but everybody's marketing 24/7. So you look at the marketing, but one of the things that you do is you start bringing up the conversation. For example, even the patient just wants their teeth cleaned, and this is a very common thing. Nobody wants their teeth cleaned. You have to find out why they want their teeth cleaned. For example, have you ever sat down with a dentist and talked about your long-term goals, like what you'd like your teeth to be like, say, 20 years from now? Or you could say something in the fact of, you know, we're happy to clean your teeth for you. Since we're new, you're new in our office, if we were going to score a 10 on a score 1 to 10 today and we're going to clean your teeth, what would it take to get a 10? By the way, what are your long-term goals? I mean, why do you want your teeth cleaned? You avoid the questions, when's the last time you had your teeth cleaned? I mean, that's a bad question. That's one of those questions that puts people on the defensive. Like walking into Nordstrom's to buy a pair of shoes, and the salesman looks at you and says, when's the last time you bought shoes? You just don't ask that question. That's not a good question. But you ask, well, what are your long-term goals? And they typically say, well, I want to keep my teeth and rest of my life. And you'll say something like, well, that probably won't be a problem. Tell me about your parents. Now, you see, if you can find a parent, for example, or a relative that didn't keep their teeth the rest of their life or had trouble with their teeth the rest as they got older, it'd be great to get the patient thinking about that. So what you do is you're starting to create the value by getting them to think. And, for example, with people in baby boomer generation, many of their parents didn't have their teeth their whole life. Many of their parents had problems with their teeth. So you could say something like this, well, it shouldn't be a problem. Tell me about your parents. Are your parents still alive? How old are your parents? Tell me about their dental health. Well, maybe one parent or somebody had trouble. Well, tell me about that. How old were they when that started? And you get them thinking about why they want their teeth cleaned. And usually it has something to do with appearance or it has to do with preservation of health. You just play with either way it happens. So that's a great question. That's what most people are going to respond with. I don't know if that answers your question, but you ask more questions to clarify that if you want.
And then that would be something that generally the staff would be doing. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what I tell clients when I take clients on, we have a 14-month coaching program. It's 12 months, but it takes about 14 to 15 months to complete because I don't work in December and August. But we teach the staffs how to do that. We teach them. We have 4 days of seminar, and we teach 3 of those 4 days are on nothing but case presentation, practicing these conversations. But when people start out, I say the doctor starts out and sets the example of this conversation, especially in your recall. Many doctors have so much potential in their hygiene department, but instead of having them belong to what I call the Crown of the Year Club and picking out that worst tooth, we start getting people talking about long-term goals. And it's amazing how much treatment comes out of hygiene when we start to ask those kinds of questions instead of just talking to them about, well, you've got some bleeding points here and we're going to have to do some perio treatment and you've got one tooth that needs a crown. No, we get them talking about long-term care. We get them talking about long-term goals. We get them talking about what they want 15, 20 years out in the future. And then, since you're going to have your teeth the rest of your life, have you ever thought about the appearance of your smile? And you just lead into conversation. So, you know, when you think about a movie star, whose smile do you think of? And you work with the public quite a bit, I understand. Have you ever thought about the value of a good-looking smile in your career? Lots of questions like that. If we had enough time, I could probably give you 500 questions to get people thinking about their cosmetics. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
I mean, you just bring it up. You get them talking about it. What is the evidence in your office currently that you do cosmetics?
Do I?
Uh-huh.
Oh, not anywhere near as much as I'd like.
Yeah, but I mean, what is the evidence when a patient comes in that you do this type of work?
Oh, what is the evidence?
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have anything that shows that.
Yeah. I mean, see, if we were selling cars, we'd have cars out there evident, wouldn't we?
Yes.
If we're selling boats, we'd have a showroom full of boats. Well, if you're going to do cosmetic dentistry, you need a showroom full of cosmetic dentistry. It's like one of our clients I was talking to today, a doctor in Rhode Island. He started asking his patients. He made up a little flyer he had. Since we started to work, he's learned to do implants. He learned to do cosmetic dentistry. He's learned some other things. And he's just showing his patients what he has available. And he said, you know, it's amazing. Most of them don't know that I've taken all these cosmetic courses.
Hey, Bill,
that I have this available. Yes, go ahead.
I tell you, one of the best things that we did was we started taking some photography courses and putting up photographs all around the office. Even if they're not good to start with, it still creates that image in the reception area.
That sounds like a Chicago Italian accent of Ivan.
Bravo!
Hi, Ivan.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Ivan. How you doing?
Wait, listen, I've got to get going. Is there anything that you'd like me to add as one of your graduates?
Well, you graduated from our program, and you came specifically and wanted to do more cosmetics.
Absolutely. That's all I do now.
That's all you do now. And we changed the method that you present treatment. We changed the way you market. We changed, or you changed. I didn't change it. You changed it all yourself. We just gave you a little direction. But that's all you do now.
Oh, my gosh, I can't tell you how helpful the taping the consultations. I didn't realize how much I touched myself.
but you went from a practice where nobody was doing cosmetics, very similar to what we hear in so many practices, to a practice where that's all you do is cosmetics today.
Yeah, the management experts told me that we couldn't do it, and we were proving them wrong now for 6 years.
Yeah. See, part of it is Ivan had to change his marketing, and a lot of it was internal. But like you said, you start taking photographs, you put those photographs up on the wall, and if you don't have photographs of your own work, buy some. Buy some photographs. Borrow them from a friend. Get some photographs. Put up on the wall and let them know this is the kind of work you do. Absolutely. Thanks, Ivan. Thanks for
no problem. Have a good evening.
Say hi to your wife.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank Mark for putting you folks all together tonight, and I'd like all of you to get on our website. I have two websites. One is blatchford.com, and the other one, which I just put up, is blatchfordlive.com, which is kind of a fun video website we just put together. But we have a coaching program. We have our Blatchford Files, which is a monthly CD, and we also have a book called Playing Your A-Game, which is a case study of 26 offices to do well. But the thing to raise your acceptance of patient patient acceptance is changed from needs to wants. It's changed from that left brain presentation you've been doing to right brain, and that's generally uncomfortable for dentists, so that's where we find the coaching comes into play. We will call you. We won't call you more than once. We'll just give you a call, and if you're interested in what we do, take the call from the enrollment specialist that will call you. If you're not interested, at least take the call and say, yeah, I really appreciate the call that Mark put on for him to manage the coaching program. We won't bother you anymore. So, Mark, unless there is anything else, other comments or questions, I want to thank you for this call. If you're not clients of Mark or financial planning, I can tell you from personal experience, working as a financial planner 4 years out of dental school, by the time I was in my mid-40s, I was able to sell my practice and change careers and start doing this. If it hadn't been for some good planning and then implementing that plan, which is what the planner did, it wasn't just the plan was simple, but it was the accountability that made this possible. So take advantage of Mark's services. Mark, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to your clients tonight.
True pleasure, Bill.
And I hope to see some of you folks in the future.
That sounds good. And our next call will be on December 18th. And if you need to contact me or my office, I'm at 1-800-281-0703 or at www.macro-wealth.com.
So, and I think that will be a follow-up on case presentation. And how I'm going to start that call is with questions from some of the doctors that have gone out and tried some of these things. And then, okay, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Should be a good call.
It'll be a great call. And last month was great, so I look forward to the third one.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.